for the development of relations in various fields. The bilateral negotiations between the two countries encompass a wide range of bilateral, regional, and international topics. Iran and Indonesia seek to deepen cooperation in various areas, including political, economic, trade, energy, scientific and technological, cultural, parliamentary, and security fields. Despite the excellent relations, constructive cooperation, and mutual support in international forums, it must be acknowledged the current volume of trade relations between the two countries is below expectations given the available capacities. Therefore, President Raisi and his accompanying delegation in this journey to Jakarta provide a valuable opportunity for the public and private sectors of both countries to become more familiar with each other's economic and commercial capacities and capabilities. The links between Iran and Indonesia within the framework of South-South cooperation have a historical background and demonstrate the common approach of the two countries to create a balanced world. The two countries have common positions on regional, international, and Islamic issues, and continuous negotiations between the two sides on these matters are ongoing. Recognizing the need to strengthen regional relations, we commend the performance of ASEAN and emphasize the Islamic Republic of Iran's willingness to develop relations with other member states of the regional bloc within the framework of the Treaty of Amity and Cooperation signed between the two sides in 2017. We consider Indonesia's chairmanship in ASEAN an optimal opportunity for developing relations with the other member states of this progressive grouping. We also welcome the possibility of regional connections between ASEAN and the Economic Cooperation Organization, ECCO, in West Asia. Issues such as the necessity of unity among Islamic countries, promoting the true image of Islam in the world, combating extremism and Islamophobia, and supporting the interests of Muslims worldwide, including the oppressed Palestinian people, are the points that align the foreign policy of the two countries on a common path. Within this framework, we believe the West Asian countries, as an environment with the highest number of Islamic countries, can overcome existing misunderstandings, and regardless of the intervention of non-regional powers, establish an intra-regional order. Negotiations between the Islamic Republic of Iran and Saudi Arabia are taking place in this regard. We believe the two countries have embarked on the right path, and this understanding will bring tangible results for the stability and prosperity of the region and the Islamic world. As an influential bloc in global equations, the Islamic world requires greater convergence to create opportunities for consensus, synergy, and the generation of innovative ideas benefiting the great Ummah, worldwide Islamic community. Undoubtedly, countries that have noteworthy weight in the Islamic world can play a leading role in realizing the interests of the Ummah. Based on this, Iran welcomes the strengthening of cooperation with Indonesia as one of the essential and influential predominantly Muslim countries in the world. From the perspective of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the unilateralism prevailing in the world, with the elimination of multilateral mechanisms and its detrimental effects on global peace and security, has now been marginalized. In other words, the security of the international system does not have a prescribed nature and has been transformed into a synergic and participatory matter with the maximum involvement of actors. The founding fathers of the historic Bandung Conference and the proponents of the paradigm of non-alignment decades ago rightly took steps in this direction and expressed their opposition to any polarization that would endanger world peace and stability. In the new international context, developing and emerging countries, through cooperation and shared efforts, can play a constructive role in ensuring global peace and stability, including in the areas of food security and energy. In conclusion, I would like to emphasize the serious commitment of the authorities in my country to the development of relations with the friendly and brotherly country of Indonesia. Indonesians are noble and hospitable, and I am deeply pleased we are in Indonesia accompanying President Raisi. I wish felicity, prosperity, and progress for Indonesia's government and great people.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady. You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear ladies, welcome to a new episode of Muslim Lady. Well, this is IRB English Radio. I am Asma, playing your host for today. And Sister Zainab is here with me. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Wa alaikum assalam and assalamu alaikum to you and your listeners.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Well, we are going to talk about the reasons of why a woman would take all that much of risk, all that much of difficulties to get into a job.
We talked about so many things like women being in workplace, the challenges she faces, yeah. Or
they we are... penetrated actually into it because we talked too much about the guilt and the mental breakdown that she's going to face.
Exactly. And I think that was important to go through these things. There's a much to talk about, mm-hmm. but like we just had a gist of all. Why she's putting herself into that much trauma physically, emotionally. There are many reasons for many kind of, you know, there are different kind of women working in the society and every woman has her own reason.
Yeah.
But the main reason, as per the research, as per the statistics that we have available, is that she wants to be a financial help to the family.
Yeah. So the first reason is that life in modern day is very difficult. So one person working outside is not going to be enough for the family to provide them with too much of facilities.
Exactly. And that's why we have, again, so much in Quran, so much in narrations about the charity, about helping each other, about being, you know, shoulder to each other, about being kind and generous. We have so much about generosity, like Imam Hassan al-Islam would give his entire property twice and half of his property once, and then, you know, the most generous is called Karimul Ahl al-Bayt, the generous of the Ahl al-Bayt. Imams teach us from their practical way of life they have lived to be generous. When we are generous, maybe someone who is forced to work outside, he does not like or does not wish to or is not able to manage or is not able to face all those challenges that we have been talking about, maybe it would be a help.
Yeah. So again, we come to the very factor that Islam recommends all of us to take care of each other.
Take care of each other.
So
yeah.
If my sister does not have enough of money and I have it, I can share half of my things with her in a way that we would make up for all the things that she does not have.
It was so beautiful. I heard someone saying that she was a very rich lady. She said that all my life I had been earning money, and the more amount of money I used to earn, I did not feel very good. But the moment I felt good was
the moment I gave them away.
When I shared it.
Yeah.
And when I started taking care. So earning did not make me mentally happy. It was giving away that made
me
happy.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's what Islam also recommends you. So Islam is actually very much keen about your mental health, which will make you feel good. Which activity of yours will release feel-good hormones in your body. Islam is very keen about it. So our teachings are not baseless. Our narrations are not baseless. They are very perfect at their place. So another reasons why a woman goes out who works. Now, we are not here to degrade all women, like while you're working, you should not be working, you should be staying at
home. No, of course not.
So another reasons are like she wants to explore her skills at a social level.
You know,
it's very important as per the
leader. That's justifying.
Yeah, a leader, as per the supreme leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, he says that it's better for a society if we have women as doctors.
Exactly, yeah.
As in the, daycare institutions, in the childcare institutions, mm-hmm. If we have women, it's far better than we have men over
and
there.
And we as women know how great it is when you go to a doctor, when you go to, I don't know, a place that the person in front of you is going to be another woman just like you.
Exactly.
You would
like
feel
I remember I skipped many times checking my blood pressure in my country because the opposite person sitting in front of me as a doctor was not from my gender, was like a male or was not a female. So I had to skip an important checkup. I had to skip, like, I don't know, during my pregnancies, or sometimes it was really important to have that checkup because as you
did not feel comfortable with that.
Exactly. As you said, like, you know, how good it feels.
It's a blessing to have women in society who are just helping the other women, you know, in being a doctor, in being a teacher.
For me, it was a very amazing thing to be, you know, coming to this country and seeing women excel, explore, and that too in hijab. That was the most amazing thing for me.
So I guess this second reason that you just mentioned is the most honorable, appreciable, and admirable reason of why a woman goes to hijab.
Exactly, because even if she is now going, because in India, probably you won't accept that, okay, I will go to a higher level job or I will go to a higher level profession maintaining my hijab, or in many other countries like that. But in Iran, I was amazed because in the very first flight that I came, the woman was the pilot.
Yeah.
And had to in hijab. Mm-hmm. So that was again, amazing.
It's a matter of pride for all the women.
Exactly. Then another thing that was amazing for me over here was that seeing all the women running an institution, which is one of the topmost institutions, one of the topmost seminary schools, which accepts students internationally. And I saw from a servant to a head of the institution, all are women, and that too, they are all in hijab, and that too, this kind of climate, because I was not able to tolerate it for some 1 month or so. It was so hot, but I was like, they are so comfortable in doing this.
Yeah, and we also have those hospitals that are just instructed by women.
That was another amazing thing I found at the time of my delivery here. That I went to a hospital and from the someone who gives me slippers, makes me prepared for getting getting checked up by a doctor, and to the expertise, all are women.
So according to what we say, I guess it's pretty much clear that we do not say that women working outside the home is not a good thing and they should quit that. Of course not. All we care about is the mental health of a woman who's working outside the home, and this balance that is very difficult for her to create between her family and her work. We are going to go for a break, and then after that, we'll go for the rest of the story.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Yes, Muslim ladies, welcome back. Well, women are great creatures who can do too much of responsibilities at the very same time. And this is very astonishing. As for me, even thinking about it makes me so scared, because doing too many things at the very same time seems to be impossible. But many women are doing that perfectly. I mean, yes, their family are going to tolerate too much. I mean, the kids, they're going to see their mothers less than the other children who've got their mothers at home. And maybe the husband have got a lot of things to say as well. But they're doing an important part in society. They are actually fulfilling the missions that has been put on their shoulders.
So yeah, we were talking about the reasons why actually a woman goes out for work. So yeah. Some of the women really don't have, that kind of thinking that I want to be a financial help to the family. But they have this feeling of being independent. They want be independent. And many other are there who don't have all these reasons, but they simply want to escape loneliness.
This is also another reason.
Yeah. And there should be some of the health groups in the society who should address to mental health of a woman, which is very, very important. And because of this, you know, just to escape loneliness, women go out to work and then they face all those challenges we talked about, or many more challenges than that.
So you ignore the home, you put it aside just because you want to ignore things.
Exactly.
Also, there's another reason that I would love to add, which is the influence of media. Sometimes many women think, okay, she has got money. I mean, she's living in a perfectly wealthy family. But still, she feels that I have to go for a job.
Which is a policy, you know, with the slogan of freedom of women. They actually want to control the population. They have engaged her so much into the work. They have engaged her so much into the, you know, economic
life. So you mean that she is busy enough that she does not think about creating a family or breeding even.
Exactly.
And then her psychological clock is going to tick at a certain age. And when she's alone...
Again, like as we said, then she has to escape her loneliness. Then she has to escape all those traumas. She again has to work. We have these propagandas today that women should be free. Women should be, you know, there's gender equality. There's gender injustice.
Yeah. You know, and that's making a family. So sad. The woman that is working too much, the woman that is giving too much of herself to this work, that to these jobs that she's taking, after a certain time, she's going to get old. She can no longer go for making a family or having children. Then she becomes lonely. And then at that time, all the jobs that she has been through, all the work that she has done, are not going to do her anything. And this is really tragic.
Exactly. It is. And, thinking about the economic growth of their country, that's another government reason that they want women forced to be in, because half of the population consists of women, obviously. And when half of the population is unworking, that means your economic GDP is not much. You don't have that gross production development. economically. So they drive women into their work, especially they know that women work for less salaries.
Yeah.
So because women really don't have this, I just said there are many reasons that they want to be independent, or they just want to explore, or many want to gain experience, and they don't demand much salaries. But men are not like that. Mm-hmm. When men work, they work for salaries. They work for huge salaries. They demand high. But from women, they're easygoing, and they're like, they see, no, she is cheap. She is, she's affordable, and we can use her beauty, actually, to drive more.
Yes, exactly.
Much of the money.
To attract more of customers.
Exactly.
And, what is even more sad is the fact that when you think about it, when you come to scrutinize into this fact, you come to see the story as this, that too many of us are working as servants, unconsciously actually. We are being the servants of a higher and bigger power.
Exactly.
And this is very sad, really, especially for women.
As the, again, Supreme Leader calls it a Zionist conspiracy, which is plotted, which is put into action by the United States and other superpowers like that. And it is definitely a conspiracy. Yeah. It is definitely a plot.
So they cover their wild intentions with beautiful slogans, just like equality of genders and women are as the same of men and things like that. But what the truth is and what we see in reality is the fact they are using women for their own benefits.
And today, women all around the world have realized this. You can see that the biggest manifestation of that is the protests on the International Women's Day all around the world.
Yeah, that's very true. So I guess as women, whatever we're doing, we said that there are too many jobs that many women are doing, and we are so much respecting them because their presence in society is just like a blessing for every woman, and they're helping. But aside from that, there are too many jobs that if they did not exist, nothing would go wrong in this life. You know what I mean? Many women are actually being a part of a bigger game and they do not know it. So I guess we have to think about these issues more and more. And yeah, take care of yourself. And until another session, wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us listen to a thought-provoking saying from the Prophet's eighth infallible heir, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him. The worst earner of livelihood is that who deprives others of improving their livelihoods through his earnings.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Palestinian children.
Part 1.
The men and women of Gaza are busy piecing their lives back together, attempting bravely to cope with extensive loss of life and displacement. And thousands of innocent children suffer deep trauma every day since having their families, friends, homes, hospitals, schools, etc., deliberately, intentionally bombed by Israel with its military. The story of the suffering they experienced and continue to experience is told in the looks on their faces, full of sadness and despair. Especially whenever they recall the 50 days of war they witnessed and survived in 2014. At the end of that war, the number of martyrs killed on the Palestinian side reached nearly 2,500, including 500 young children. The number of the wounded amassed to 12,000, of whom 3,300 were young children. Every child of Palestine now carries with them memories of explosions, of screams of horror, of seeing dismembered and burnt bodies, of the smell of death brought down on them by the inhumane, unconscionable actions of Israel in its efforts to oppress its occupied territory. A tank massacre here, an airstrike massacre there, is all justified by Israeli politicians and condoned by Western governments that protect these Israeli war criminals from ever facing justice in court.
This is the first time I've entered the school since the incident. It's painful and depressing for me. Inside the school, I felt my brother's presence, as if he was calling my name. He was martyred here. I also got a sense that my mother wanted me to pray for him here. The feeling is of utter sadness and grief.
Hussein and Ibrahim are standing on the ruins of the house overlooking the school in the northern Gaza Strip town of Beit Hanun. This school belongs to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees. UNRWA is a UN organization. They recall back to the second day of the month of August 2014.
We are staying at the house of the late Shabab Ahmed al-Shinbari. Here there are 25 family members all living in a three-floor house, 150 square meters. The Israeli occupation forces targeted this house during its 2014 military aggression on the population of Gaza. We were evacuated quickly and headed to the UNRWA school in Beit Hanun shortly before our house was bombarded.
It was midnight when they blew a hole in our house with a tank shell about where we are sitting. We escaped to my uncle's second house, but they dropped gas bombs there. My aunt said we should prepare ourselves to go in different directions in the morning. We went to my aunt's house in Al-Gharman Street, but the Jews entered and demanded us to leave. Finally, we went to the Western School at Beit Hanun.
We moved from our home on the first day of the ground incursion mounted by Israeli forces. We went to Beit Hanun Co-ed School A and D blocks. A municipal vehicle arrived on Thursday to transport us to another school because children at Beit Hanun had been hit by shrapnel. There was a bombardment near the school where we were sheltering.
We have informed the IDF, you know, nearly 32 times about the school, its a place, who are, where in that school, what they are doing, and, you know, everything, you know, that it is should be a safe place, that you have the UN flags and the GPS had been sent to the Israeli side. The real information, in real time, we were sending them every day about everything.
Officials at the UNRWA relief agency in Gaza believed Israeli army assurances regarding the guaranteed safety of their accommodation centers, accordingly informing the displaced people that a school in Beit Hanun, which was sheltering hundreds of Palestinian refugees, was a safe zone. Like blood to a vampire, however, this gathering of displaced families incited the appetite of the Israeli occupation army for killing, which found easy prey. They informed the UNRWA Relief Agency and International Red Cross to evacuate the school of the displaced. The people gathered in the school yard and waited for the arrival of buses to take them somewhere safe, all of them a clear and easy target for slaughter. The Israelis rounded them up and killed 16 of them where they stood, mostly children, and wounded more than 55 others.
The Red Cross came 2 days earlier. There were 3 Red Cross vehicles and 10 Red Crescent vehicles. They announced that they came to transport the most serious cases, such as those with disabilities, the elderly, and the injured, mostly shrapnel injuries. As they took people away, we asked them what was going on, and if they thought the school was safe. They confirmed it was safe and that there was nothing to fear. We trusted that information. The UN and the Red Cross came 2 days later with buses to move more of us to the Jabalia refuge camp. People gathered in together and we all went downstairs.
My aunt was collecting laundry and about to sit and rest when the shells pounded us. Shrapnel sliced open my stomach and my intestines fell to the ground. My brother found me lying underneath my siblings. He moved me outside and on foot he took me to the Kamal Odwan Hospital. They urgently referred me to Ash-Shifa Hospital, where I went under surgery. 10 centimeters of my intestines were cut off. Now every time I eat and when I drink water, my stomach hurts.
Five of my family were martyred, praise be to Allah. 16 other people were injured, including Manar, who lost both her legs, Ibrahim, whose intestine were reconnected, and my brother Mahmoud, who had his arteries severed.
What happened in that school, it was a real catastrophe, actually. We have tens of people that had been killed and injured in that school. The Board of Inquiry investigated, you know, what happened in Beit Hanun school. It is a message, you know, that here in the Gaza Strip, that there is no safe place, even in a school, on the street, at your shelter, to your home, everywhere. No safe place at that time.
We don't want to stay here at the school. They forced us to come here. We don't want to be here at the school. They are all liars.
People of the world find it impossible to believe that anyone, even a Zionist occupation force, would have the audacity to bomb the accommodation centers of the United Nations. The Israeli army had orders to kill anything that moved, and this policy was exercised throughout Gaza in their ground incursion. On the 16th of July, 2014, 8 children from the Bakr family went to play on the beach of Gaza. They were kicking around a soccer ball when from Israeli military ships in the sea, missiles fired on the beach, specifically targeting the children playing.
On July 16, 2004, Ismail was sitting with his cousins. I told them that it was Ramadan and that they shouldn't be playing football and bothering the neighbors. The street is too narrow to play football. It's 2 meters wide, which is not enough room. All of us here are brothers and cousins. We live in a sector of homes the size of 1 square kilometer, which houses 1,000 people thereabouts. Ismail said he was going to play outside with his cousins. It was sunny and hot, so they went to the beach to play as they often do. It's not far, and it's the only suitable place to play, next to the part of the beach reserved for swimming.
Stay in here, son. They're shelling outside. He said he wanted to go to his uncle's house to play with their kids.
Ahid is my one and only grandson. He came after 9 granddaughters. Zakaria, my beloved son, the youngest. He was spoiled. He was my entire life.
I am accompanied by Al Said, Hamada, Yunus, Ismail, Ahid, and Muhammad, and we're heading now to the spot where we used to play as kids. We are fishermen, and so the sea is our life. We are always on the sea.
The Bak family is a renowned family. We're known to be fishermen by trade. We inherited that from our fathers and from their forefathers who inherited it from Sheikh Bak. The sea is life and breath to us. When our children want to play, they go to the beach.
We set up the goals here and divided ourselves into 4 teams and we played football. The boys said they're thirsty. They wanted to go drink some water and come back. I took them to get some water and when we came back,
we resumed and finished the first round. In the middle of the second round, Ismail kicked the ball and it landed next to the container. We asked him to go get it. He brought it back, along with Mutazim, Zakaria, Ahid, and Muhammad.
The warships were there. We saw that they were filming us. They sent a missile to the beach, and it wiped out my cousin. The first missile landed there, killed my cousin Ismail, and we started running to get off the beach.
The rest of the group came running toward us. We saw them, but Ismail wasn't with them. Bashir Abu Warfa was standing there. When he heard the explosion, he came out from the tent. He stood by us while we told him that Ismail was killed. The other children reached us.
They fired a second missile, and it landed here.
We decided, Hamada, Yunus and I, to hide behind the tent. Muntasir was on the ground. They fired another missile at us as we fell behind the tent. Yunus hid in a barrel while Hamada and I kept running. Muntasir ran with us. Hamada and Muntasir entered the tent seconds after us. Bashir Abu Warfa was crying out, "O people, help us. The children are dead. The children are dead."
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Rabbitu billahi rabba wa bil islam dina.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers, dear sisters, salam. So welcome. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. And for this episode, we have an interesting topic. We're going to speak about bringing up daughter in a Muslim family.
I pray to God, my heart, soul, and body, every single day of my life, with every breath, I solemnly promise to try to live my life for you. Oh, Allah, you did revive my soul and shone your light into my heart. So please, you is now my only goal. Oh, I love you so. I love you so.
Today, Thursday, is the 5th of Zilqada, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 4th of Khordad, 1402 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 25th of May, 2023 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We bless this moment by recitation of chapter An-Nahl, verses 58 and 59.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. وإذا بشر أحدهم بالأنثى ظل وجهه مسودا وهو كظيم.
And when one of them is informed of the birth of a female, his face becomes dark and he suppresses grief.
يتوارى من القوم من سوء ما بشر به. أَيُمْسِكُهُ عَلَىٰ هُونٍ أَمْ يَدُسُّهُ فِي التُّرَابِ أَلَا سَاءَ مَا يَحْكُمُونَ.
He hides himself from the people because of the ill of which he has been informed. Should he keep it in humiliation or bury it in the ground? Unquestionably, evil is what they decide.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
This verse refers to the hideous evil habit of the parents for sake of complementing the discussion. It implies that when one of them is informed of good tidings of having been provided a daughter by Allah, he will be so infuriated with anger that his face changes altogether and becomes blackened while being full of wrath. It is true that the birth of a child is considered as a good tiding, but superstitions regard such good tidings as disgrace and humiliation.
Life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light that guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong and right. World that often lies, 'cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
So let's speak about the blessing of having the daughter. Allah Almighty says what means to Allah belongs the dominion of the heavens and the earth. He creates what He wills. He gives to whom He wills female children, and He gives to whom He wills males. Or He makes them both males and females, and He renders whom He wills barren. Indeed, He is knowing and competent. The Holy Quran, chapter 49, verse 50. We notice in the verse that the mention of daughters preceded that of the sons. and the scholars commented on this, saying this is to hearten others and encourage kindness towards them, because many fathers at that time felt burdened by receiving a daughter. The common practice of the people during the pre-Islamic era was to hate receiving daughters to the extent that they would bury them alive. Therefore, it is as if Allah is saying to people, this inferior child in your estimation takes precedence in my scale. Also mentions daughters first to indicate their weakness and that they are therefore more deserving of care and attention.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his beautiful progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, today we are going to talk about the Islamic perspective in upbringing the girls and our daughters. Today, educational aspects have become more difficult with the advancement of technology and the use of online tools. We cannot deprive our child of this space, even at the age of 7 and in the first grade of primary school. But based on the Islamic education of our girls, we should teach her that, like movies are created by the director's mind and special effects, everything she sees on social networks cannot be lifestyle or a personal character. We should simply teach her that, like movies that are created by the director's mind and special effects, so everything she sees on social networks cannot be a lifestyle, let's say a desired lifestyle, or that is really a personal, let's say, point of view of a person. That would be a personal point of view of someone. The next step that I want to present here is the teaching of individual difference. It is possible that our daughters witness and watch some differences from other girls. In some ways, let's say in the face of some of her friends, there are some differences to her, and in the end, this keeps her busy. According to the structure and instructions of Islamic education of girls, individual differences can be a good signs. Can be signs of the oneness of God. So we can, through the differences, we can teach her about the oneness of God, that God has arranged all human beings together like pieces of a puzzle. Each of them is distinguished depending on a series of individual characteristics that can be seen in the face, morals, body and behavior.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light. Be like a rose, spreading its fragrance in every palm.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
Teach your daughter. Your family and home should always come first, honey. The feminist movement and the fight for equality between men and women has stripped the woman of today of her most important treasure, the desire for being a homemaker. This is not to say that a woman should not have a career or endeavor to be more than a homemaker. We have several examples amongst Muslim women, particularly that of Lady Khadija, peace be upon her, who was one of the most successful businesswomen of her time and one of the most successful women in the Akhirah, the hereafter. However, teach your daughters to not fall in the trap of considering homemaking as something that is beneath them. the work of women with no ambition or something that needs to be shared between husband and wife. We are told by the Prophet, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, that his daughter Fatima will be the leader of the women of Jannah. And if you look at her life, you will find that she has spent her time as a devoted slave of Allah and a homemaker, who worked tirelessly for her home and her family. The Prophet said, if a woman prays her 5 daily prayers, fasts during the month of Ramadan, guards her chastity, and obeys her husband, it will be said to her, enter paradise by whichever of gates of paradise you wish. This is today's special and raising a daughter. Even though having a son and a daughter is different, as people tend to prefer a boy rather than a girl, parents must not treat it differently. Whoever loves their daughters and sons equally will be admitted to paradise. It is said, whoever had a female who has not insulted by him and had not preferred his male children to her, Allah admits him to paradise. If someone raised his daughter well until she got married, Allah makes Jannah a compulsory for him. The obligation of a parent will end once the daughter got married.
Let's see, what does the religion of Islam say about daughters? What does the religion of Islam, how does the religion of Islam portray sisters and daughters and women, and generally speaking, in the Quran and in the Hadith? Because even now, you find there are some cultures that are against women. You find some cultures that are misogynistic, that have this negative perspective of daughters. If they have a daughter, they're going to treat their daughter differently from their son. And this is a reality that goes on even until today. Or you find that in some cultures, the men, they inherit, the sisters don't inherit. This is happening right now in some countries. They pass on a house or a belonging, a farm, only to the men in the family, afraid it's going to go towards someone else. And this is something that is haram. This is something that is against Islam. This is something that is against what the message of Rasulullah came with. When we look at the Quran, we see that women and daughters and wives are discussed. Some people have the idea that it was only the prophets who were the men that are mentioned in the Quran, and they're the ones who are the men of God and the ones who brought the religion and everything. No. One example Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives us is Hawa, Eve. Today in the Christian, in the Bible, it says, and even in some, this has made its way in some of the Muslim books, not the Shia books, that the Eve was created from what was remaining from Adam, the soil that was remaining from Adam. Then Allah saw that there was some extra, so yalla, let's go, let's make Eve now. Let's make Hawa. When this is not right. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created Adam and Eve together. Or there's a mindset that it was Eve that made Adam eat from the tree. No, they both ate from the tree. It wasn't one to be blamed over the other.
So, inshallah, we continue on the next episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio, inshallah. Till then, fi amanillah.
Told me that I'm crazy, who you praying for? They told me there is nothing, who you looking for? Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes I was mesmerized. But deep inside I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.